You're a little older and a lot wiser. The future is yours. Define aging on your own terms. Welcome to AARP Without Limits with your host, Mike Olander.
Hello and welcome. This is AARP Without Limits. We are disrupting aging one show at a time. All of our episodes are available anytime on demand at WPTF.com. or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. I'm your host, Mike Olander. I'm the director of AARP North Carolina. And we have a great show for you today, folks. William Ray, the director of emergency management for the North Carolina Department of Public Safety, is with us here in the studio to talk about how the state is recovering from Hurricane Helene, how we're preparing for future emergencies, and what you need to know to protect your home and your family. But before we get to him, as always, ladies and gentlemen, or almost always, I'm joined here in the studio by the true talent of AARP Without Limits, Mr. Mike Davis. Mike D. in the house. How are you, my friend?
You know, you always say that I'm the true talent, but I only come on for a minute or two, and then I'm gone, and then it's you. So I don't know about that true talent stuff. I really don't.
But that's all you need, Mike. Just enough there to remind me with your true talent radio voice.
And that statement alone is why I believe you are the true talent of AARP.
Because I know how to recognize talent?
Because you just like that, right off the top of your head, you've got the snappy comeback.
Well, I appreciate that. Well, remember what guest did we have a couple of weeks ago? I think it was Sarah from Institute for Emerging Issues. The second she met you, she was like, oh, what a wonderful radio voice you have.
And I said, oh, thank you very much, which is my standard comeback.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, all right. Okay. Yeah. Real recognizes
that,
real. There you go.
Something like that.
We'll leave it at that. Anyway, yeah. Mike, how are you doing? Summer's, and by the time people hear this, the summer probably will be over.
Yeah, you know, temperatures have cooled down a little bit. I'm good. As you know, we made the official announcement a program or two back that I'm, quote, retired end
right?
quote. I have told my wife I want to go back to work so I can rest. Mm-hmm. This honey-do list that she has is remarkable.
Yeah.
And it's kept me busy, but things are going very well. We're getting a lot done around the house, let me tell you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yes, right? It is. I'm really loving it. I love my new schedule. I'm still, because I'm here, people say, it doesn't sound like he's retired. I'm still doing some projects, which I'm glad about. I didn't want to, you know, just sit at home with my feet propped up. So I am staying very busy. Had a great trip, I believe we talked about previously.
Oh, yeah.
Got back from that, and I've hit the ground running. So my summer/fall has gone very well so far. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Just got off a really great weekend. My special significant other, she turned 50. And so we celebrated beach house on the beach with some friends, and low key, you know, we're not big party animals or anything, but it was just really, really nice to do it. And it felt special, I think, as intended, and she was happy, and that's what matters.
That is what matters.
Big milestone year. Also, there's something else I wanted to share with you quickly, Mike. I've shared with you in the audience before how we're big fans of Broadway. We go to a lot of Broadway shows up in the city. And top of my list, we have this running list here, okay, of our top five shows, which is for both of us as Phantom of the Opera. And Listen to that. Okay. And I'm the talented one.
And Will is over here just shaking
his head. He's shaking his head going, God, I thought AARP, I thought these people were going to be serious.
Welcome to the show.
Yes. So, do you know, what do you think, have you ever heard the term immersive experience before?
I have, yes.
Okay. Well, for those people who don't know, according to Google's AI here, an immersive experience fully engages a user's senses and emotions, making them feel present and deeply involved in a digital, physical, or mixed environment, often through technology like VR headsets or haptic devices, but also via physical spaces like theme parks, interactive art installations, or even theatrical events. And theatrical events, that last note there, there is a Phantom of the Opera immersive experience going on Broadway right now called Masquerade.
Okay.
And it is so cool. I didn't know what to expect. There's a dress code. You have to dress up formal, right? Black, white, or silver. No exceptions.
Okay.
Okay. You have to wear a mask. Okay. Some kind of mask, black, white, or silver. Okay. If you don't have one, they'll give you one in there at the door.
Okay.
You get a password 24 hours before, so not just the ticket, but you have to actually give the password.
Wow.
Unique to each show that you go to. And it is literally, you're in this giant building, each room, multi-floor building, each room is a different set throughout the show, and you are there with the actors in the same room. I mean, as close as we are right now, with our guest, Mike, the scenes from the show actually being acted out, and you're made part of it. Oh. And it was just absolutely amazing. The props and design just as well done as the actual show, including the fog with the gondola. I mean, we're walking next to the gondola, and Hugh Panero, one of the classic Phantom of the Opera actors, is there. I mean, it's him right next to us. So really, really just amazing experience.
Wow.
The best part, though, was the key moments throughout the show where they actually give away some keepsakes for people. And I'm sitting there. We're in the labyrinth, and Christine is on the bed reading a note from the Phantom. And she reads it out loud, and she looks up. I'm kind of sitting in the front row at this point.
Okay.
Every room is different.
Okay.
This particular moment, I'm sitting right in the front. And she looks up slowly at me, and she locks eyes with me, Mike, for about 3 seconds, and then very slowly hands me the note, gives me the note.
Uh-huh.
So, and I didn't realize at the moment, I'm like, do I give it back to her? What do I do? Like, what do I know? I've never been to an immersive experience before. Well, yeah, it was. It was one of the three or four keepsakes they gave out. And so I've got this wonderful prop from the show. What a great experience it was.
That's terrific.
Way more exciting than ARP Without Limits. I hate to break it to you, Mike, but I have to
say, I don't know about that.
Talk about an immersive experience.
Wow.
Maybe we could dim the lights here. We could get a smoke machine in here.
Let's not get carried away.
Maybe we should just stick with what we're good at.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
That, sir, is fantastic. Yes. I'm going to look that up. Maybe I'll treat my wife to that.
I tell you, that make a great holiday gift. They just extended it for another month. It was supposed to end beginning of November. Now it's the end of November. Anyway, as always, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to indulge in the little light chat here with Mike. Let's get to the good stuff here. Very happy to have with us William Ray. He's the Director of Emergency Management for the North Carolina Department of Public Safety. And very timely as well, because we are still in the midst of hurricane season, and there's really never ARP has been very involved since Hurricane Helene on a couple of fronts, including doing some new trainings to help our volunteers with outreach immediately after a storm. But you know, so much information that's critical to know right before a storm, right after a storm. Of course, people are curious about what's going on with Hurricane Helene and the recovery. That's been in the news a lot lately. That I'm really delighted to have Director William Ray on the show. Will, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me here. I'm still stuck on the dad joke from a couple minutes ago. I've got to up my game here. I'm sitting here racking my brain for how I can follow that. So I'm very happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
That's all right. Let the beginning here not set, well, I guess it's supposed to set the tone for the show, but we're here really for the good stuff. If we could, let's start a little bit with you. Just share with our audience a little bit about yourself,
sure.
Who you are, and how'd you get to arrive where you are right now?
That's a fantastic question. I've had the privilege of being the director here in North Carolina since about July, August of 2021, when the previous director, longtime director, retired. Have had the opportunity to work with North Carolina Emergency Management and the Department of Public Safety since 2018 in a couple of different roles. Have been in the emergency management as a whole space for a while. Started actually here in Wake County locally, doing local emergency management, local public health preparedness work. Have worked in healthcare emergency management setting, some time in the private sector, worked at the state level now for a while. So have a little bit of a different and I think different background to how I've arrived here, but it's been a really incredible opportunity and really grateful for the opportunity to sit in this current seat.
Great. Well, I'd like to shift it to give us all a bit of a better understanding about how emergency response works here in our state and how it's structured. It appears, you know, to the outsider that it's fairly complicated. I mean, sometimes we see the governor certainly declaring a state of emergency, going out to sites of a disaster, and of course local officials and responders. Can you walk through basically what is the basic model here in North Carolina?
That's a great question. Like? Absolutely. We have a kind of a saying in our line of work that, especially here in North Carolina, everything begins and ends locally. Mm-hmm. So you are in a community, you are going to be experiencing whatever the event or incident is well before anybody from outside that community, certainly anybody from Raleigh, gets there. And after, you know, those that have come to help have moved on to something different, that community and those folks locally are still very much experiencing that event and will for a while. And so that's really the focus of everything that we do. At a state level, our role is to make sure that we are supporting our local communities across North Carolina with the assistance, training, exercises, education, response equipment during an event, deploying necessary resources into their community. That's really our focus. The federal government and FEMA and the federal interagency are very much a part of that and what we do. But at its kind of core fundamental level here in North Carolina, the emergency management structure is one that is focused on how do we support those local communities and the people that live in them or that are visiting them. Mm.
And just to follow up on that, if I could, with the way you mentioned the federal government, I mean, I'm assuming that they primarily communicate with the state, mm-hmm. right? They're communicating with the governor's office. But then, you know, locally, is there any interaction with them at the local level too ever?
Or? That's a great question. Yeah. I think, you know, oftentimes after an event or an emergency or a disaster, we always get the question of when's FEMA mm-hmm. coming? You know, when does FEMA assistance start? And unfortunately, as I think many of your listeners probably know, it's not quite that cut and dry. And so you can feel free to cut this out. But here in North Carolina, you know, you will have a community having an event that impacts them. There's the initial emergency response. How do you protect life and property in that community? How do you stabilize the situation? And then the state and local community and local officials will come in and do what we call a damage assessment. So mm-hmm. assess, you know, what is damaged in the community, either from a disaster survivor, you know, personal standpoint, homes, et cetera, or from an infrastructure standpoint, what's been damaged, I think roads, water systems, government facilities, public sector. Based on that assessment, we can then go to the federal government if we meet certain thresholds and request a federal disaster declaration of some sort. That's really what then unlocks some of the federal support. Mm-hmm. So most recently here, you know, not knowing when this will air, we recently received a federal disaster declaration for Tropical Storm Chantal that came through and impacted very locally some areas here in central North Carolina. So we recently received notification of that. And that event was at this point about 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. Really, I think the point being it's incumbent on that local community and state agencies, state partners, on making sure we have what we need to support emergency response and the initial recovery for that community. And then I think as we're able, you know, certainly we'll bring FEMA and others into the fold as needed. I think one of the things that's unique about North Carolina, you know, people also have this, I think, perception that FEMA's something somewhere else and then they magically come in. Here in North Carolina, we're really fortunate that we have a FEMA integration team here on the ground. And so we have a small team from FEMA that lives with us every day, that works alongside our staff in a bunch of different functions. And so we have kind of a daily collaboration, coordination, integration that happens. And that makes, when we do have a major response, that is one of the items that makes that response and initial recovery, I think, go much smoother.
This sounds like would have to be critical. You have people right here in North Carolina. Great clarity on that. Certainly answered some basic questions I think most people have. When we return, we're going to continue our conversation with William Ray. This is AARP Without Limits. We'll be right back.
AARP is working hard to make sure people in North Carolina are getting the most out of life. Whether it's helping you stay healthy, save more money, care for loved ones, or simply have some fun, AARP is making a difference in communities across the state. You have a wise friend and fierce defender with AARP. Learn more about progress being made for older adults in the state by listening to AARP Without Limits. You can find the latest episodes of AARP Without Limits wherever you listen to your podcasts.
And we are back. This is AARP Without Limits. Just a reminder, folks, we always love to hear from you. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion for a future guest or topic, please send me an email, aarpwithoutlimits@aarp.org. We've been speaking today with William Ray. He is the Director of Emergency Management for the North Carolina Department of Public Safety. We've been talking a bit about the structure of how emergency management works, both in, you know, in concert with the local authorities and responders and the federal government. Will, recent news, in the recent news, there's been a bit about the state's recovery from Helene. I think most people understand that there are state responsibilities and federal responsibilities. And there's been some back and forth recently between North Carolina state officials and FEMA and the Trump administration to make sure that we have a full recovery. Can you just get us up to speed? Where do things stand right now with recovery?
Sure, great question. I think one thing that I think is important for folks to remember that emergency response, emergency preparedness, recovery from an event is not purely just a public sector function. Here in North Carolina, you know, we're in emergency management, so we have buzzwords and acronyms and all the things. We talk about whole of community a lot. But I believe here in North Carolina, we actually deploy that way. So when we talk about activation of the state emergency response team, if when we talk about supporting local recovery efforts, it's not just the state agency. It's not just emergency management. It's not just the state level agencies. It's public sector, private sector, nonprofit and volunteer agencies. It's local, state, tribal, federal, kind of at all levels. And I think that's important, not just in response, but in your question about recovery. I think it takes all of those agencies, all of those organizations being aligned and moving forward with a unity of effort to support the impacted community or communities getting back on their feet. And so I've really continued to be incredibly proud of the partners and the agencies and the organizations that have come forward that are continuing to support not just the initial response from Helene, but over now almost the last year of work in those impacted communities across Western North Carolina. And so I think there's a lot of activity that is still ongoing. Certainly, a lot of it is focused on housing. A lot of it is focused on infrastructure redevelopment. So think water systems, roads, power grid, some of those types of things. One of the big topics and focus right now is on debris removal. Again, when you're talking about an event that is that catastrophic in nature, that's that widespread in scope and impact, the amount of debris on the roads, on property, in the waterways is just significant. That has a, no pun intended, downstream impact. You know, if we don't get debris out of the water, that that causes more problems with flooding for future events. And so, it's one of the critical recovery tasks that we have right now. One of the areas that FEMA and the federal government come into play when we have federally declared disasters like Helene or like Chantal recently, is the funding support that they bring to bear. And so, as you know, I mean, you've been out in Western North Carolina, you've seen conditions on the ground, you've had volunteers working out there. Many of those communities have significantly invested in response and significantly invested in recovery. Some of them probably well beyond the annual operating budget of that local government. One of the things that comes to bear when we have a federal declaration is potential reimbursement to those communities locally and to the state government and eligible organizations for work that they've done in response and recovery. And so it is unfortunately always kind of the long tail of an event, but one that is critical to recovery. And so right now what we're working through is local units of government are submitting packages for review through FEMA for response costs that they did in Helene, for some of the initial recovery programs that they've rolled out, for debris removal, some of this. And that's happening both at a local level, so at the town, city, municipal level, as well as the counties, and as well for us at a state level. And so that is a normal process to kind of go through for any federal event, that you work through this reimbursement evaluation. And so FEMA will provide reimbursement to local units of government, to other eligible applicants, to the state for expenses they deem eligible related to emergency response and recovery. And we know that that funding and that funding getting back locally into those local communities is critical. And so right now, I think what you see the governor and the current administration doing is, how do we continue to partner with our federal agencies and get that funding moving as quickly as possible back into those communities so they can continue to provide essential services to their local communities and those that live there, but also really continue to move them successfully down that recovery continuum.
Hmm. We're in the midst of a hurricane season. It seems like we've gotten off pretty easy.
Don't say the Q word. Okay. Don't say the Q word.
I don't know what that is, but good, I promise I won't say it by accident. things have been pretty good. I'm thankful for that, right? What's your take? What's your expectation? What are you hearing?
So actually right now, there's a system that's out in the Atlantic basin right now, moving through stages of development. I think right now, I looked right before we came in here, and I think they're anticipating, the National Hurricane Center is anticipating some tropical development in that system over the weekend. I think it'll be named pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So I think right now I'm really, really fortunate. I have a staff of 4 to 5 meteorologists in our organization. That's a capability we have here in North Carolina that others maybe don't have, and very fortunate to have that level of expertise here to get, our own internal analysis, working with partners in the National Weather Service, the National Hurricane Center. And so our team has been working really since it was identified by the Hurricane Center, monitoring that system, what the development could look like based on conditions in the water, based on conditions that they see in weather patterns moving across the country. So it's something we're keeping an eye on and taking a look at, certainly monitoring any potential impacts to parts of North Carolina. And again, I think it's a good opportunity to remind folks, I think we think hurricanes, we think coast, and I think as we saw in Helene and some other events over the last several years, that it's not just our coastal communities that are impacted by tropical weather. And so to me, it continues to reinforce the importance of everyone here in North Carolina, regardless of where you are living, needs to really be focused on and thinking about personal preparedness for you and your family and what it means for your broader community.
That's a great segue, because we've talked about state and federal and local responsibilities. We haven't gotten to the personal yet, because people do need to take some responsibility if they know that something's coming in order to be prepared. This summer, the state launched a new campaign to help people with some of that. Prep a little, save a little. Prep a little, save a lot is the name of the campaign. Tell us a bit about that.
Sure. So again, really proud of our external affairs team, and I think some of the creativity they've put in. It's not super exciting to always necessarily talk about a personal preparedness kit and a preparedness plan and extra water and that type of thing. And so I think they've done a great job trying to make it interesting and engaging. But I think fundamentally, investing a little bit of time on the front end with you, your family, your neighbors, those in your community that you rely on as a support system, investing a little bit, whether it's time or money on the front end, I think does pay dividends if something impacts your community, if something impacts your ability to stay in your home for some period of time. And I think people think it's just a large, significant expense. And, I think there are some very small steps that folks can take, when you run to the grocery store on your regular weekly run, adding a couple of items on that are shelf stable foods or batteries, or taking some of those types of just small incremental steps and building up a preparedness kit at home, I think can lessen some of the impact that you see. But I think really the crux of that campaign, I think something you hear us say publicly when we're doing press conferences and other things around events, is the importance of that personal preparedness. And it's not just a kit, right? That's a really important piece of it, having batteries, water, shelf-stable food, things that would allow you to be in your home for a period of days if you didn't have power or water. But it's also that plan for you and your family and the communication of that plan. You know, if you for some reason are unable to be in your home, you have to leave your home, you have to leave your community, you know, what does that look like for you and your family? Where do you meet each other? How do you communicate? Having some of those conversations on the front end is really important. And lastly, I would say, again, it's one of those items that just kind of often gets glossed over, but I think having some of your critical records, critical paperwork, whether it's prescriptions, insurance policies, pictures of valuable items, et cetera, those are all, you know, really easy things you can do walking around the house and, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes one day, you know, setting yourself up to be able to provide necessary documentation if you need to help with reimbursement. Again, it feels very administrative and, you know, why in the world would I need to be doing this? But I think as we look at events that have impacted North Carolina, when we look at the needs of survivors, you know, having some of these things at the ready can really lessen and mitigate some of the impact that people feel in those communities that may be impacted.
Mm. And the stress too, because, you know, when you're dealing with something in the moment, you're not, you know, you're in a dealing with a crisis potentially. You're not thinking clearly maybe about, like, when was the last time I got batteries or where's this or that or, you know, what have you. And just the simple act of being, like you said, 15, 20 minutes, throwing some stuff on your shopping list to make sure you're there. I have a habit every 6 months. I start up the generator, let it run for a few minutes just to make sure it starts up good and everything is right where it's supposed to be and nothing's been moved in the garage, you know, things like that. So this way, if you do have it, it's almost muscle memory, you know, like you trained yourself to check in these things every now and then, and then boom, you can deal with the priorities in the moment, right?
Yep, I think you want to be able to focus on you and your family and your safety and not have to think and kind of run all over the place. And you, like you said, in the moment of stress, try to remember all the things that you need to do. I think oftentimes it feels a little overwhelming of where do I start? How do I even think about this? What are the basic things? I think if you go to readync.gov, that's one of the websites that we have. There's a bunch of resources on there for folks to use, not just during an event, but on blue sky days like today. There's some resources on there to help folks start to build both a personal preparedness kit for you and your family, but also build that personal preparedness plan. The other thing I think, and I think also of critical importance, is making sure that folks have ways to get reputable, verified, actionable information. And often, as we started this conversation with, that's going to come locally. Mm-hmm. Your local emergency management agency, your local public safety agencies, law enforcement, others, you know, they have local alerting systems, they have reverse 911 systems. I would encourage folks, if they have not done so, to go on those websites, sign up for those alerts. That is how many local communities in the state push out emergency information about evacuations or impact to the area. That's of critical importance, because we need to make sure folks have the right information that's verified and actionable at the right time so they can take the right steps for both themselves and their families.
Great, great information. ReadyNC.gov.
That's right.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for being with us here. Well, we really appreciate all the information that you shared with us. That is a wrap for today's show, folks. I want to say thank you to William Ray for being our guest. Thank you to Mike Davis for production. Thank you for listening, of course. This is Mike Olander with AARP North Carolina. You've been listening to AARP Without Limits. We'll see you next time.